because that's what the reality is. Because a lot of tier two, tier three cities would hand paint your pack on the wall just to say that these milk packs are available here.
What kinds of cardboard boxes?
What's in the box?
What's in the box?
It loses its value if you take it out of the packaging.
Hey, PDU crew, it's Velio Matas, the host of Package Design Unboxed. Today's episode, I talked to Neha Tulsian. Neha founded NH1 Design Studio in Gurgaon, India. And since I'm in the American Southwest, I got to get out and I got to talk to designers from around the world. This podcast allows me to do that. So even if that means that I get to talk to designers from around the world digitally, it allows me to see how they are solving everyday issues that I may not encounter, but I can certainly learn from. And so can you. So there's three things that you're going to get out of this episode, at least. Number one, sometimes you just got to chase down your passion. Neha discusses how her agency was growing based on word of mouth from one specific industry when she realized maybe that's not the industry she wanted to be in. She didn't want to necessarily be known for that, so she took her chance with a new client, and the rest is history. At least it's history in the making, and it's growing her agency in a completely different direction. So definitely check it out. Number two, the impact that culture and society has on design. You know, the decisions that you make as a designer really are impacted by a lot of things, but these are two things that really make a difference. We go into that. Then number three, taking the time to network and how to find your next agency client, because if there's one thing we can all use is another client. Now, towards the end of this episode, we run into a few mic issues and we had to edit out a big chunk of it because it just was not listenable, which really sucks because we were discussing one of my all-time favorite projects that she had put together, which is called Don't Hide It, period. It was a design for good passion project of hers, and it aims to open up the lines of communication about periods with design, frankness, humor. And this award-winning design for Don't Hide It, period, went on to raise a ton of money for charities to help inspire open dialogue around this sensitive topic, which shouldn't really be that sensitive. And if you're not even sure what I'm talking about, I'm talking about periods. So, you know, being on a period, it shouldn't be something so sensitive. We should all be able to have a conversation openly. And some of the designs that she put together was really around opening up that level of communication. If you're with Unilever or a large brand that wants to help support this and help stand this up for good, definitely go to nh1design.com, learn more, reach out to her. Now, make sure that you take the time to find me on LinkedIn and sign up for my weekly packaging class on LinkedIn Live, because it's every Friday morning. And this Friday, we're talking about laying the groundwork for innovation and how to innovate structural packaging. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to learn how I do it. We're going to see how other people do it as well. Should be definitely fun. And you know, you can talk to me on LinkedIn Live. You can ask questions during the classroom. You can post comments. A lot of good stuff happening there. Now, just a quick shout out to somebody who left me a review. They left it as Sun Loves It. And they left a 5-star review saying Avelio does an amazing job with so many packaging topics. So thank you very much. Sun Loves It. If you want a pre-show shout out, just leave a review wherever you get your podcast. I will definitely find it and I'd love to share it. All right, guys, let's get to the show.
It'd be great to understand the environment in India for designers. What are the challenges that you're designing for versus there's always a lot of representation for Western brands. So everybody feels like that's the way that brands should be developed.
Yeah, because you know, it's so interesting. In India, when you work for especially a FMCG product, a packaging product in India, you have to realize the culture of a society is such that you're also talking to a high-income group and a low-income group at the same time. For example, if you're designing a package for a milk product, which is an everyday consumption product, which is equally used by both the stratas of the society, even the uneducated ones, you know, the category code has to be such that it has to look like a mass market product. Otherwise, if it shows it's kind of expensive or very the thing, it, people at the lower end of the spectrum start getting scared looking at the product. So it's really, really interesting when you're designing for a culture like India, where you have various different religions, various different cultures, all of them coming together, and the income level groups as well, because there's so much difference between the rich and the poor. There's a vast divide. So you have to actually keep your target audience in mind. You're not, and not all of them are educated, right? So sometimes you come up with really quirky packaging, but you know it's not going to work because your target audience wouldn't understand it.
With packaging, you're communicating not just the safety and the efficacy of the product, but also like there's just so many different things that packaging has to communicate. So if you're saying you know, we design something that's kind of quirky and fun, but if it misses an entire segment of the audience, then it's not a successful design.
Yeah, completely. I completely back that, because I feel, for example, last year we designed a product for Godrej Jersey. It was a mass market FMCG product, and they had a range of dairy portfolio, from milk to curds to ice creams. So indulgent categories and your basic day-to-day consumption categories as well. And what was very interesting, that when you are especially working with a legacy brand, which has been in India for over 30 years, you have to really go very deep to understand what are the categories, what are the visual cues which people relate the brand by. And then while you're upgrading the packaging and bringing everything under one umbrella, you have to keep in mind that you're not losing the legacy of the packaging while reinventing the wheel for them as well. So they can be future ready without losing the heritage of the brand.
We're in the podcast. We're doing the interview already, because I was going to go ahead and start talking, but we just got right into it.
Yeah, you can start. Yeah, that's fine. You can do it.
I guess you founded NH1 Design Agency. How long ago did you found it? And really, what's the story behind NH1?
You know, to be very honest, I never had a dream of starting my own agency. It was by luck. I studied in London. And post that, I interned in London with various companies like Johnson Banks, William Raham. There was a company which specialized in annual reports those days called SAS Design. And after which I joined a company in India called Rain Keshwan Design, which was later acquired by Brand Union. I got married, moved to South Africa, moved back to India, did a bit of back and forth between cities because my husband had a job. And then finally we landed up in Delhi. And when I moved to Delhi, I didn't know anybody in Delhi. And I just thought, let me just start something. I got one or two freelance projects. I started working on them. And then I just realized I didn't want to work alone. And I hired a first designer who I could never afford to hire.
Sure.
And she was a fashion designer. And she wanted to learn graphic design. So she came on board as an intern. And that's how I started NH1 Design in one of my rooms in my apartment, and NH1 Design was born there. I hired my fifth person at home, and that's when I realized there was no separation between private life and professional life anymore. And that's when I took up an office, rented an office space, and moved out. Wow. It's been a very organic process, and I would call it the lady luck. Our first design project which we ever did at NH1 Design was a healthcare project. And that won a couple of national awards. And because of which, people started looking up to us and we started developing a healthcare portfolio. So that's how NH1 Design was born.
You know, on your website, you state that NH1 marries science, design, and logic. So I get the design part, but what is the science and the logic part?
I think science and the logic in the design process is more the research, the consumer insight, and also any project, typically has a very robust process to it, right? So you do a couple of meetings with the client, you understand what the product is, what the business strategy is, who they are talking to, right? What will appeal to the target audience. That entire process is the science of it. So that's what we call the science and logic part. So once we understand that is when we start, after we write a customized briefing document for the client, and it's actually a very robust briefing document, which they fill in. And then we have a debriefing session with the client just to understand whether we have articulated all the points correctly on the briefing document. And at this point, we would have also done a competition research and analysis. And what are the competition saying, and how are the products talking, et cetera, and where does the product market fit into the entire marketplace? And then is when we start marrying the design and the intuition and the magic part of it.
Yeah, as I looked through your website, you talked about medical. There's a lot of medical clients, but then you also have alcohol, and you start broadening into real estate. So at what point did NH1 take a departure from medical?
You know, what I love about our business is that we get a chance to understand about other businesses. And once we got deep into healthcare, what I realized that, you know, clients start to bucket you. If you do one great healthcare project, so here comes the second healthcare project. Yeah. Then comes the third healthcare project. But I think on the third year of NH1 design, I actually told my team, I really want to do FMCG. I love drinking. I really want to design alcohol labels. And at my first alcohol label actually came a part of me being an entrepreneur. So I had joined an entrepreneur's club and I met a guy who was trying to launch a gin label. And with that gin label, I said, let me do it. And he gave me a chance to work on it. And it was very interesting because if you keep working on a particular vertical and you go very deep in it, you kind of put an extra effort to understand another vertical mm-hmm. altogether. So hence we started working on alcohol, loved the entire experience of it. When you see a finished product, when you see completely like you can put various intricate print effects on it and you can have a beautiful bottle come to life. I mean, that's what gave us real pleasure. So we always say from births, we've done hospitals, we've done alcohol, we've done food. We can actually take the person through the entire journey of life.
Of their life.
I'm yet to design the tomb. No, that's the only thing which is
that's next. That's next. So is the project that you're talking about, is that Gin Gigi?
Yeah, that's Gin Gigi, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and that label is amazing.
Yeah, that was designed by a colleague of ours called Arvind Narayan. And he takes really a lot of pride in it. I think it's really, really his baby and how much love he put into the entire design.
Penswolds is celebrating our 16th annual competition. We have partnered with Package Design Unboxed to bring you exclusive content from our jury and previous winners. Our competition is currently open until the 1st of April. Penswolds would love to see your packaging designs. Submit them at penswolds.com.
Hey, I want to introduce you to idpdirect.com. We recently won a Silver Pen Awards for collaborating on the future of sustainable packaging. If you want to work directly with the packaging manufacturer and you're tired of distributors and middlemen, check them out. Visit idpdirect.com to learn more.
Yeah, and as I pull up the Gin Gigi label on my screen, the science and the design and the logic, this one really embodies that. And the reason that I feel that it embodies it is when I first look at the label, you know, the typography is amazing. The color selection, which is, you know, gold and copper and white. You've got a really plush paper, so you're getting a really deep deboss happening. And that's all great and good. But then as I learn more about the product, the reason for the illustrations start to tell a different story. And I love the idea of every element in this design telling a story about the product. So how does that come about? Is that part of the brief? Do you see that before you even get started? Where you want to go, or how does that evolve?
So, Ali, as I said, this was actually as a part of more like a design entrepreneur, how this project actually landed in our sheet. So, when I met the client, this particular label was actually designed for the export market, US, Chicago to begin with. And then it's now in Sweden and a few other countries as well. And we were very clear, we were portraying Indian gin on a global stage. So we wanted to clearly stay away from the stereotypes associated with India, right? Stereotypes isn't making it like taking inspiration from either the truck graphics or any of the typical typical graphic system which is associated in India. We wanted to keep it very international, yet rooted to India. And because the entire product story, again, if you go deep into the brief, was rooted with the botanical story of the label. So whether the entire ingredients was from the juniper berries was sourced from the Himalayas. So when we got into the entire the ingredient story, we thought that was could be a very culturally rich story, and that would also give the bartenders another parallel story to play with when they are at the bar making a cocktail using Indian the Jinjiji. So, you know, it's not about just the bottles. You have to also understand how this entire story come alive at the bar as well. So if you have little herbs from India kept in the bar, topped with the Indian Jinjiji bottle as a POS, I think what's going to really happen is that you'll start indulging in the brand a lot more. The craft of gin would really come alive. Hence, taking inspiration from that, we did these ornamental Indian botanicals, and we've crafted the entire label based on that. The label was also not printed in India. It was actually printed in Australia. The clients knew of a great vendor in Australia. He got them printed in Australia. And we did more than 50 color variations of it before we sealed on what 3 colors for the brand.
Amazing. And what about the bottle shape and design?
So that was a bit of a thing. So bottle shape and design, in fact, we are working with the client right now to do a customized structure for the bottle. We were working on extremely tight budgets. It was one of the client's first venture into alcohol. He was mostly like a distributor here. And so we worked with whatever was available in the market because you had to have a minimum MOQs to be able to do a customized bottle. So this is one of the biggest challenges which I see with especially newer brands. Getting a customized bottle becomes a bottleneck because of the sheer price attached to getting a customized bottle done. So I think this is the 4th year of Jinjiji. I think now they are getting a customized bottle. We're planning a customized bottle.
What about the lid on here? It looks to be like a copper. And it matches the foil color, which then, as I read more in there, you know, there's the copper equipment that's used for gin production. Again, it's like every little piece tells a bigger story of the brand.
Yeah, so we kind of reverse engineer a lot of things. So you had a problem. You were stuck with the bottle. So because we stuck with the entire copper distilled and the copper color of the label, et cetera, so we somehow convinced the clients to kind of do the copper cap for it, and he agreed to it, and then we went ahead.
Yeah, and you're right. There's a lot of brands where if you're in alcohol, the challenge is the bottle, right? So it's like finding a stock bottle that is close to where you want to be, and then adorning it with beautiful labels and maybe a secondary label over the lid. It's a challenge I think a lot of people face. And a lot of times entrepreneurs don't realize they're going to face that challenge.
Right.
They see all the beautiful bottles on the shelf and they say, I want a beautiful bottle too. Not that this isn't a beautiful bottle, but it's like, I want a custom bottle. And then you're hit with the realization that customization is very expensive and has really high MOQs. So Jinjiji, you met at an entrepreneurial networking group. Besides that, how do you typically bring on new clients? How do you meet new clients? How do new clients find you?
You know, networking is a very important aspect of bringing on new clients. And secondly, I think your work, our business is primarily a word of mouth story than anything else. So we do whatever work we do, typically we get referred to by our clients. So that's one way you find new clients. Only in the year 2020, we started doing something called an active new business development. And we put a function or a role in our organization when pandemic hit, where we started actually going to your stories in the VC circles of the world, figuring out which clients have got a Series A, Series B funded, and then writing to them to showcase our work. Because not everybody can, you can't leave to chance that people will discover you. Sometimes you need to go out and get discovered by people. And to a surprise, we did convert 3 new businesses last year through our process, the new business process. So it was a great learning, very exciting. There's a lot of work which goes into new business development. And I feel it's a role by itself. And being a small studio, we hired somebody for that role altogether, because we never had that person on board. So I think 2020 was that one change which we did was to how to get new clients. Otherwise, there's a group called Entrepreneurial Organizations, which my husband is a part of, and I'm a spousal member. I think that also gives us a great networking platform to network and just meet like-minded fellow entrepreneurs who might have completely different businesses, But the challenge is the same across industries.
Right.
So that gives me a great backbone of support.
And like you said, you know, you've spent time in healthcare, in drinks. You take all these little experiences from each one of those. And when an entrepreneur knocks on the door and says, I have X product, you've never seen anything like this. You know, as a designer, you're kind of like, I've seen something like this. I've seen these challenges somewhere else. I can apply my learnings to your solution.
Yeah. For example, I'll give you a question. What can a hospitality industry learn from healthcare and vice versa? A healthcare industry has a lot to learn from a hospitality industry. I think if you really go deep into various verticals, I think you can really start switching the learnings from one another and come up with completely unique insights for the brand.
Yeah, especially healthcare, right? When you walk in, you want to be greeted, you want to feel safe, you want to be accommodated, which is all the things that happen when you go into a hotel, right? It's all these little details. Absolutely. When we talk about your process and wanting to move away from healthcare into FMCG, right? We enjoy our drinks. We like the alcohol bottles. We love the labels. But then you have something completely different, which was you revamped Jersey. They've got chocolates. They've got milk. They've got a variety of different products. What's that process like? You've got some amazing packs there as well, like from a structural standpoint. You have some interesting boxes for some of the milks. What does that process look like?
Jersey, all the structures which you see on our website currently was already being used by the client. In fact, that was one of the challenges we had to work with. For example, I still don't like the structure of the milkshake, not the milkshakes, but the flavored milk. It was a really thin looking bottle. It almost feels like I get very little milk when I'm drinking that bottle. When I see that bottle. But we had to just work around that. In terms of the process, it was a 25-year-old brand which we started to revamp. It was called Creamline Jersey. It was acquired by an iconic Indian business conglomerate. And that's when the business conglomerate invited us to not look at one-off packaging for everything, but to design a packaging system for them, which could live with the range of products which Jersey has to offer. And tomorrow, if they're launching a new new variant or a new category, then the design system is already set and they can easily adapt and move forward. So when we deep dived into the project, we saw that the cow patches was something consumer really related Jersey with. And that's why if you see the entire design language has taken inspiration from the cow patches, because we personally felt the cow patches are superbly modern and they could be easily extended with different cultural elements. And the entire portfolio could be actually created through that. And we exactly did that. For the ice creams, we introduced another layer of textures into it. For the thick shakes, we actually made it a lot more modern because a younger audience would be drinking it. So depending on the audiences and the appeal which we wanted to give to the audience, to our target market, we customize each category, each variant accordingly, while bringing a part of the unified portfolio.
Okay, and I'm looking at the milk packs, where it's a bag of milk, right? Yes. So
yeah,
that is very different for me. I've never seen milk in a bag, and
yeah, okay.
It makes a lot of sense when you think of, at least for here in the US, when you think of it. Here we have all these containers. We have a lot of Tetra Packs.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of PET containers for milks, but this is just a flexible film pack and you just tear it and drink it and enjoy it. So like that makes a lot of sense from a branding standpoint. Looking at the old pack design, there still had the cow patches, but it wasn't as modern and prominent as what you've developed. And just going back to the original conversation that we had of your designing packaging for a wide range of consumers, from very poor and uneducated to very financially stable individual. How does that range of consumer affect the design choices that you're making?
So whenever you think of a mass market consumer product, you have to understand that the fabric of a society is such that there are different cultures, there are different income groups you're talking to. For example, a milk pack, though you don't tear it and drink it immediately. There's a traditional Indian way to boil milk before you do anything, drink it. If you're talking to a varied range of audience, you have to make sure your category codes are such which people understand, right? So it's, you're talking, because your audiences are so varied, especially when you talk, when you're doing a very mass market consumer product like milk or sugar or any of that, you have to ensure you're following the category codes. You have to stay within that while you're breaking a little bit of boundaries. I'm not saying you can't go completely, you can't have a very out of the box design which could stand on the shelf. Of course you can do that. There are many brands who've done that, but you still have to stay within the category codes because you're talking to various, a varied range of audiences, and you have to appeal to all of them.
And then I also see on your site, it's showing this product being delivered to a Jersey parlor. It's a different delivery system than what we're used to in the US. So how does the supply chain play into your design choices as well? Like, are you thinking of how this product is being delivered, how it's being displayed? Obviously you are, but how is that different?
No, so when we started working with Jersey, we actually went to Hyderabad. We woke up at 4 a.m. to see how does milk gets distributed to all the little vendors, the little corner shops, and there's these tea stalls where milk gets distributed to. And the typical vision is you'll see crates of blue color crates, you'll probably see it on our website, lined up and the milk packs in it. And people would probably come at 6 a.m., 7 a.m. to go and buy those milk packs. And they'll buy one or two milk packs and they'll go back. So you will have to keep in mind that entire supply chain, how it works, how the packs are kept, at what direction they are kept when you're designing the branding. So, you know, you kind of ensure that people can still see it. And even the crates are actually branded.
Sure.
So whatever identity you take, even the crates are interestingly branded. And then you have to also think of wall graphics, which would be later be hand painted. And your packs could also get reproduced while they are being hand painted, because that's what the reality is. Because a lot of tier two, tier three cities would hand paint your pack on the wall just to say that these milk packs are available here.
Sure. So if your design is really complicated, then you may have issues with the painting, with the hand painting and the display.
Yes, you would. Yeah.
Yeah. You're also on the Pent Awards jury this year, which I am too. So I'm really excited to be on there with you. When you're looking at the packaging submissions, do you feel that you're going to have a gut reaction to whether something is good or something is bad, or how do you judge? How do you critique packaging?
First and foremost, yes, I will have a gut reaction. But then I will have to let my gut reaction subdue and take a very strategic approach to understand what was the brief, what was the client, what areas were they talking to, they're targeting, what are the geographies they're going to be present in, and how is the market at that place? And then kind of take a call in terms of whether the brief was answered, whether the packaging had an appeal, what was the product innovation done there? Because I think some of the packaging awards you need to see, what was the idea behind the product packaging? I think that's another very big, a good idea, beautifully crafted, is something which we all look for.
Perfect answer. And I'm stealing your answer, because that's how I'm going to now approach my judging.
Perfect. Thank you.
So absolutely. So Neha, once again, thank you so much. I appreciate you being on. If anybody's interested, you can take a look at her website at nh1design.com. I'll have all the links in the show notes, and you can reach out to Neha and try to get on her schedule, because she's got a lot of really cool projects happening, and their growing team is going to do some amazing work.
So thank you for your time.
That's it for the show. Thanks so much for joining us on Package Design Unboxed. If you have any questions, you can find me on LinkedIn. I'm always available for questions. Once again, check us out at packagedesignunboxed.com.
Check out SpecRite, the number one platform for specification management. Not sure what board your box uses? Not sure how many colors or how much headspace your packaging requires? If you don't SpecRite, you'll guess wrong. specright.com.